Morning. As you know, we've been doing a series this summer, our summer series on the Apostles' Creed, and we built that series to have a couple of breaks. A month or so ago, we had a 1 week of sharing something different, just to give us a break from the series, just a little change up. And today's that other break. And so today I have a message that I think is a good message for us to hear. A message that I need to hear, that I need to be reminded of and challenged by and encouraged by. So I'm looking forward to sharing something with you today. Faith, seeing the invisible. Have you ever heard something that you heard it and it just... It may be something you'd heard many times before, but all of a sudden, it just seemed kind of strange. Like, wow, that's kind of an odd thing to say. And that occurred to me recently, reading in Hebrews chapter 11, near the end, in verse 27, it's talking about Moses. And it says, in verse 27, it says that by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger, he persevered because he saw him who is invisible. And what caught my attention there and made me think, what? It says he saw him who is invisible. That doesn't make any sense. Can't see what's invisible. Can't see what's invisible is invisible. But Moses saw him who is invisible. And that piqued my interest, and I wanted to share some thoughts about that today. So let's pray and commit this time in my words to His glory. God, we thank You that we can gather freely today to look at Your Word, be instructed, encouraged, compelled by it. I pray that You would take my words and that I would be compelled by Your words, and we would all together be moved by what You have to say to us today. Thank You that You do speak to us. You do speak, and we want to listen. Help us do that. In Your name, Jesus, amen. So he saw, Moses saw him who is invisible. The situation that Moses was in, as many of you know, the Israelites, God's people, had been in Egypt about 430 years. And they'd been slaves for most of that time, about 400 years they'd been slaves in Egypt. And God heard their cry for mercy and for deliverance, and he sent Moses. And Moses had grown up as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, but he was leading the people out. He had identified with the Israelites, and he was leading them out of Israel. God had sent the plagues. And finally, all the firstborn had died, and Pharaoh was sick and tired of these plagues and basically said, get out, go, leave. And so Moses and all the people, a large number of people, left. Well, when Pharaoh saw all his workforce leaving, he had second thoughts. And so he sent his army to bring them back. And God led his people, Israel, up against the Red Sea. And Pharaoh's armies come behind him to get him. They're stuck. And so they panic. They cry out to God. They cry out to Moses. And Moses says, be still. It's okay. God has it. God has a plan. Moses saw him who is invisible. He couldn't see. He saw the same thing the people saw, the sea, and he saw the same thing the people saw. He saw the army. But he saw something more. He saw God's hand in it. And God had assured him of deliverance. And he opened the Red Sea, and they went on. And this idea that he saw the invisible, you know, we depend a lot on our sight. Our sight is an important one of our five senses. We take in a lot of information through our eyes. And in fact, we really are convinced often by what we see. Because how often have you said, I saw it with my own eyes? When somebody says, I saw it with my own eyes, It means I didn't hear this from somebody else. I saw it with my own eyes. In court, an eyewitness. We have an eyewitness. That's pretty compelling when you have somebody who saw what was going on and can testify to that. Say, I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. And so we depend on what we see for a lot of what we count on. And yet, we are told many times in Scripture that faith is being sure of what we don't see, of being convinced of what we don't see, being certain of what God has. In Hebrews 11:1, a famous verse, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. We are called to be certain of things that we can't take in with our eyes. And that's a challenge to me. That's a challenge to me. When I read that, I'm so prone to count on what I can see and to discount what I can't. What I can't. But all through that chapter of Hebrews 11, God is talking about giving us examples. Noah, it says, he was warned about things not yet seen. Abraham lived like a stranger, looking forward to a city whose architect and builder was God. These people did things, made choices, made decisions based on things they couldn't see, based on truth that they were confident in, even though they couldn't see it, couldn't hold it. They made these choices. And that's the life of faith that we as Christians are called to, is to make decisions, make choices, act in certain ways because of things that are true that we can't necessarily see. So I want to read a short passage here in Hebrews 11 that I think really gets at the heart of what this is like. Verses 13 through 16. All these people he's talking about, these people of faith, all these people were still living by faith when they died. In other words, they lived by faith for their whole life. They lived their whole life in light of things they couldn't see, and they didn't see them before they died. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. A couple of things there in verse 13. They saw and welcomed them from a distance. There were things that God had, they were taking God at his word. There was promises of God that they were seeing from a distance. And they were welcoming them. That welcome word, it's kind of odd. What do you welcome from it? But they embraced it. They took it in. They counted on it. They welcomed it. And from a distance. You know, it's when we see something from a distance, we all can't always see a lot of detail, right? That's what's implied there, is you're looking from a distance and you can kind of make out what's there, but it's not absolutely clear. It's a ways off. It's a ways off. They welcomed it from a distance. They got a glimpse of the eternal. They had a glimpse of the eternal. They had a glimpse of a vision of picture of what they were going towards, but it was a ways off. It was a ways off. In 1 Corinthians 13, it says in verse 12, it says, "Now we see, but a poor reflection as in a mirror." It's a poor reflection as in a mirror. You know, he's saying we don't see clearly. We don't get a lot of detail about life after this life. What comes next? We don't get a lot of detail. In fact, I don't know about you, but sometimes when somebody's too certain about what heaven's like, If they get too specific, I'm a little doubtful, because God tells us we're seeing dimly in a mirror, a poor reflection in a mirror. But it goes on to say, then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. We know some now. We know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. We see these things from a distance. These things of faith. Just a little picture of that came to my mind. We have often gone on a canoe camping outing. I don't know if you've ever been canoe camping, but it's kind of like car camping, but you've got a canoe. And all your stuff is in a canoe. And you go from lake to lake to lake. And there's places you can do that, like in the Boundary Waters. And the tricky part is when you loaded all your stuff, your tent, your food, your stove, everything in your canoe, and you get to this other side of the lake, and you want to get to the next lake, you know what you have to do? You have to portage it. You have to take everything, pick it up, and carry it over to the next lake. And it's a bit of work. And the portage is a trail through the woods. And some of them are quite long, some almost a mile, some. Anyway, a phenomenon that you discover is, well, the reality is there's mosquitoes because it's Minnesota in the summertime. And it's sometimes hot, and the pack is heavy. Nancy will tell you she always gets the heaviest one. You might have a canoe on your shoulders and a pack on your back, and so you're going along this trail, and really the goal, you want to get to the next lake, because then you can set all this stuff down and put it back in the canoe, and then that's easier going. And oftentimes you'll see through the trees up ahead. You're looking up ahead, and you'll see the trees kind of open up. And you might even think, oh, it's water. You might be coming just to the top of a hill, but eventually that opening is to the lake, and you see a bit of water. And you can't see it real clearly. You don't see the full picture, but you know where you're going. You get a glimpse of it. You see it. You welcome it from a distance. That's what these people, of faith, welcome these things from a distance. It also says that they were strangers, foreigners, aliens in this world. They had another home. This wasn't the place they belonged. They belonged somewhere else. These people of faith, they knew that they belonged somewhere else. In Philippians it says our citizenship is in heaven. Our primary citizenship. Our citizenship isn't here. This isn't our home. This is where we are now. But we're headed to a better country. A better country. It says a country, in verse 14, it says they were looking for a country of their own. A country of their own. That is essentially, they're looking for their homeland, their hometown, where they really belong, where they're from and where they're going, where their citizenship is. That's what they're looking for, a country of their own. For a better country, a heavenly one, it says. And you know, so you can have a couple of reactions to that. When you say, this world isn't our home. We belong somewhere else. We're headed for a better country. I think there's two reactions we can have. One is, wait a minute. I like my life. Life here is pretty good. We have it pretty good. Look at a beautiful day like this. How can you not like a day like this? This is a great place to be. What are you talking about, another country? I like this one. That can be our reaction. Because the world looms pretty large in our thinking, doesn't it? I mean, the things that we get to experience, the blessings that we have, it can be pretty attractive. I'm inclined to put down my roots here. I'm inclined to squeeze every ounce of pleasure and satisfaction out of this life that I can. That's our inclination. And so when we read that, that says, well, we don't really belong here. We're heading somewhere else. I go, wait a minute. I like it here. This is good. What are you saying? I saw a poster or something recently, and it said, every day better than the last. Wow. I don't know where they live, but another one on the back of a car. I saw just the other day. No bad days. I want their life. No bad days. Yeah, if this life is it, we can talk a bit about that in a minute, but we can be inclined to want to wrestle this one to give us what we want. The other reaction, so one reaction says, wait a minute, I like your... The other reaction is, yes, we're going to a better country. This life leaves me wanting. Tell me more. Tell me more. So let's compare those two things. This country and the better country that we're heading for. This country, first of all, this life, many blessings. Like I said, God has richly blessed us. Common graces, a day like this, we get to enjoy this. That's a blessing. We have much to be thankful for. And it says, Paul told Timothy that God gives us all things to be enjoyed. God blesses us and we should fully enjoy them. But in the midst of those things, well, here, Luke, can you go to that next slide? Oop. There we go. I Googled life is good. And, you know, you see, you go to the images, you see posters. And here, a little bit like those bumper stickers, saw, my life is good and it will keep getting better. Person must be 21. All right. It'll keep getting better. Wow, that's a nice thought, isn't it? Nice thought. My life is great because I made it that way. Any other than happiness doesn't get a pass key. What in the world? What planet are they living on? I mean, I hate to be a naysayer. I mean, and I hate to squash somebody's party, but life can be great. But it has its rough edges. And if you don't know that yet, you will. And it just surprises me when people say things like that. But if this life is all I've got to count on, if there is no better country, I've got to think like this, or despair, or think, it's a drag. Life's a drag, and then you die. You know, it's kind of the two options, you know? This country, because in the midst of the pleasures, there's an edge of disappointment, I believe. Because all the pleasures that we enjoy are temporary, aren't they? They last so long. And so often, there's just a little bit of that, boy, that was good, but, oh, boy, if it was only a little bit more, you know? Even, this is the downer part of the message, okay? You know, even the things that we enjoy, if you have a good friend, a spouse, and you have harmony, and you enjoy each other's company, and you love each other, friends, spouses, the bad news is, unless something's unusual in your situation, one of you gets left behind for a while. And that's the fact of the matter. That's sad. That's what this life offers. There's an edge to it. There's an edge. And then there's pain, there's illness, there's disappointment, there's broken relationships. All those things that there's injustice. Bad things happen to good people. It does. Bad stuff happens. And it bothers us, but it's true. And you know, if you're going to, like I said, if you're going to seek your, I call it your settled satisfaction, if you're going to put your hope, if you're going to believe that this life is going to give me what is going to fulfill me, and you have to overlook a lot. You have to overlook a lot. You can't look too close. I have to protect my rosy view of life. This person said anything other than happiness doesn't get a pass key. I have to keep all that hard stuff at arm's length, otherwise it disturbs my peace, disturbs my satisfaction. How can I read the paper and take in all the trouble in the world if I believe this life is all I get. That's a hard thing. I have to protect my rosy view. And in fact, if that's true, then if I'm doing okay, but someone close to me is having trouble, I got to keep them at arm's length. I don't want them to disturb my peace either. I have to keep that uncomfortable stuff away. And now, I'm not saying we just say, well, this life doesn't matter, and we just, you know, it's all in the future. Just let the world go to pieces. We are called to do what we can do, to meet needs, to end suffering, all the things that we can do as believers. And through history, Christians have done much in this world. In this world, much good. But this world is limited and it's temporary. Its pleasures are temporary. It will only satisfy to a point and not ultimately. So what about that better country? The better country that these heroes of faith were seeking, were looking for. What about that country? What's that like? What do we know about that? And just a little bit of a picture in Revelation 21 when John was given this revelation in what is coming in the future, at the end of the age, in the New Jerusalem, and it describes it like this. In verse 3, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God." And here's the really encouraging thought. "He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." Think about that. No more death, no more sadness, no more pain, no more disappointment, no greed, no taking advantage of others, no temptation, no uncertainty about who I am and where I belong. All of that is passed away. No hard feelings. No ants at your picnic. It's perfect. And we can you comprehend that? I can't comprehend that. I can't comprehend the settled satisfaction that would bring to be in that situation, to be in that state where everything is as it should be. There's nothing missing. There's nothing or anyone missing. It's really beyond our comprehension. In fact, in 1 Corinthians it says, "What no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor heart of man has imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him." We can't imagine it. It's beyond our comprehension. Beyond our comprehension. Little verse in 1 John, it says, in 1 John 3:2, it says, "Dear friends, now we are the children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure." We don't know what we're going to be like. It says right there. But we're going to be face to face with God in his presence, like it says in Revelation. Beyond our comprehension. And back in Hebrews, it says these people that lived in hope that were longing for that day. They were longing for that country. They were wanting it, desiring that more than all that they could squeeze out of this life. They were wanting that. They're wanting that. So why is this important? Why can't we just do the best we can and then show up at heaven's gate? Why is this faith important. And a quick three things in Hebrews 11:6, it says, without faith it is impossible to please God. If we want to please God, we have to exercise, we have to learn to see the invisible. We have to exercise faith to please Him. Our confidence in what He has for us versus seeking our satisfaction here in what He's made versus in Him and our future with Him. He's pleased with our faith. In Hebrews 11:16, it says, well, let me read that. 11:16, we read it a minute ago. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. He's not ashamed. He's glad. He's proud of us if we will take Him at His word and desire that more than we desire comfort and satisfaction here. And then finally, and I think most significantly, in Hebrews 12, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Fix our eyes, again, talking about eyes of faith. Run with endurance. Without faith, apart from faith, apart from seeing the unseen, we cannot run with endurance the race that God has set before us. We cannot live the life that God has in store for us unless it's by faith. We cannot do it. We will not endure. It says run with perseverance. We might run for a little bit, but then when difficulty comes, when we're disappointed with what the situation He's brought our way, if we aren't seeking that better country, we bail. If this life deals us a bad hand, where's God? What's He doing? I thought my life was supposed to be smooth and easy, and He's not providing that. What's the deal? We will not endure. Will not endure. We'll either lose heart, despair, or we'll just say, this life is it. I'm just going to get what I can out of this life. Without faith, we can't run with endurance the race set before us. We will despair or settle. And oftentimes, it seems we're not too hard to please, but we're too easily pleased. I'm too easily pleased with this life. I think, yeah, give me a few more days like this and I'm fine. You know, I don't need to think about a better country, but with that mindset, I can't live the life that God has in store for us. These people in Hebrews, they made decisions, they made choices, they took action based on that faith they had. And that expectation that there was life after this one. There was life beyond this life. So, this, like I said, this is a message I need to hear. Because sometimes the mirror gets kind of fogged up and I don't see the eternal very well. And I need to hear this message. I'm so dependent on my senses. But I was thinking, can this be cultivated? Can I promote this in myself? Can I cultivate this, or is it you got it or you don't? And just a couple of thoughts. One is, I think we can pray that God would open the eyes of our eyes of faith. Paul prayed that for the Ephesians. In Ephesians 1, he says, I pray for you that God would open the eyes of your heart that you might see what God's doing and the blessings He has for you. So we can pray. We can ask God, help me. Help me see beyond my circumstances. Help me see beyond this life into all that you have for us. And practice seeing those things. Longing for that country, that better country. Look forward to it. And one of the things that I think I need to do, maybe you do too, in order to be more aware of that better country is to stop moving and be quiet. We can be so busy, so we keep moving, keep listening, keep the inputs. Slow down and listen. Stop moving. The other thing I think that we can do is to be honest about this life. To be honest about this life. Recognize this life for what it is. Recognize the good, the blessings God's given. Be grateful for those things. Enjoy them. But also recognize that the hard things, difficulty, that this life brings to you and to those around you and to the world. And to realize that it's temporary, that it's passing. And let those troubles whet your appetite for that better country. That I think I've found that to be true, even in the weeks I've been cogitating on this, is that as I look at the things going on in the world, I go, oh man, this is not right. It's not good, but boy, there's a better world coming. There's a better country that I'm wanting to go to. So let it whet your appetite for that better country. And then along those same lines, as don't mistake the pleasures of this life for the final goal. Pleasures of this life are to be gratefully enjoyed, but they are just that, they're pleasures of this life. They are temporary. When we're confused, hurtful, sorrowful, angry, remember that that is this life, and there's a better country, a more excellent one coming. The bad news is, about the pleasures of this life, the bad news is nothing in this life lasts forever. The good news is nothing in this life lasts forever. The good doesn't last, and the bad doesn't last. And I think we can take comfort in that. And God knows that. Because our life is a mixture of both. Pleasures and difficulties. So when we encounter difficulties, when we encounter the world, what I need to do is look up, look in the distance, welcome that better country from a distance. A more excellent one. Well, I hope these thoughts have been an encouragement, that they're a challenge to me to look up, to look beyond this life to the better country. God, we thank you that we have a hope. We have a hope of life beyond this one. Whether we're riding high and loving life right now or really struggling, God, you have a better country for us. You have plans for us that we can't imagine. Help us keep that in mind so that we might run with endurance the race that you've set before us, the life that you have for us, each one of us. You have things you would like us to do, things that you have put us here to do. Help us to long for, reach for that country and do things you called us to do here and now. God, thank you. In your name, amen.